I would quite like you to imagine yourself at your best. I would like to imagine yourself in a way where you are able to go around, do what you need to do, whatever you meet on your path that needs doing, you'll be able to turn your hand to, you're able to see where people need help, and you can just step in and help, or step in that way. And your energy is just flowing. Never tired. How does that sound? Can you imagine yourself in that way, where you just are like that, where your energy is always bubbly, overflowing, always there, always ready, and you're sort of in it. You're sort of in it. It's part of you, and you are part of it. Now, maybe you think I'm describing you there to a T. Possibly. But if not, this is very much what the Bodhisattva would feel like. What a Bodhisattva would feel like. A Bodhisattva who has committed him or herself to the release of the suffering of all beings in this world. That's how he or she, let me call her she now, goes about her path. And everything flows. Everything just flows. It's easy. It's just there. It's available. Now that is virya. That is that sort of energy for you, where you're able to just respond to whatever is going on in the moment. So it's a kind of energy that is overflowing and always being fed by the Dharma. Because virya is not just energy. It's not just any old energy. Virya is translated as energy in pursuit of the good and the wholesome, or also as enthusiasm by Shantideva. It's called enthusiasm for the spiritual path. To have real enthusiasm for going about your spiritual path. So it's actually our natural state. It's actually in us, innate in us, that free and flowing energy. That sort of abundance and that being able to be spontaneous in the moment. And without virya, there's not really a spiritual life possible. Because without energy, you're not really going to be achieving very much at all. So virya very much underlies the other paramitas. It's very important to have virya and to work on virya, to stimulate it, to encourage it, to rouse it in yourself. And when you've got it, you know you've got it. And you may all, you probably have all moments or periods in your life when you really feel in touch with that. It might just be in your meditation practice, or it might just be going about your daily business in life. Or if you go on retreats, that might be when you really sort of feel plugged into that energy, where you just, things just are easy. You don't worry so much, you're not feeling resistant to what is happening. Because as a bodhisattva, you just understand that whatever happens, happens. And there's not much you can do to sort of resist it. It's kind of futile. You sort of go with it. Now, I need to get my specs out. I forgot about that. Purple diamante. Yeah, because if you've been here for the whole series of the talks on paramitas, no, but if you haven't, just want to recap that the word paramita means actually to cross over to the other shore. So it may also be translated as perfection, the way we say the perfection of wisdom, the perfection of meditation, and so on. So it's actually reaching beyond limitation. And that's quite an important aspect of it. So through the practice of the paramitas, all of them, we cross over this sea of suffering. We cross over to nirvana, to liberation. Now, even though it's innate in us, unfortunately, we're very much subject to our particular moods and difficulties in life that sort of keep us from really realizing or feeling the paramitas in full. You could compare it to, say, a sunflower seed. The potential is there, but it needs cultivating. It needs the right conditions for it to develop and grow. Same with the paramitas, same with virya. So the paramitas are really an inner cultivation. It's a daily practice to become wise, to become compassionate, more loving. And it's not just for us. It's what we need to serve the welfare of others and for the attainment of enlightenment. So all these virtues, and virya in particular that feeds it, is very much about growth and development. Growth and development. Virya is only virya when it's rooted in the Dharma. Otherwise it's just plain energy. Lots of energy about, and lots of energy of course gets wasted. But if you're rooted in the Dharma, if you're informed by practicing the precepts, by meditation practice, then you're into connecting with virya, with that which energizes you, which inspires you. I certainly remember that from my very first retreat, which actually didn't come along to the movement in Holland, it was in England, small mistake, when I was on the big summer retreat in Battle at the time. It was my first retreat. I'd never really been to any Buddhist retreats. I didn't know anything about Buddhism. But I just remember one evening, it was in the summer, just walking across the lawn there and just feeling, I had this sort of energy that, you know, I didn't know what to do with it. I had so much energy on that. I was 20 years younger, okay. But, it's true. But I was often just running around in the evening. I was just running up and down these hills just so, you know, I could sleep at night because I had so much energy. But I had this memory of feeling this inspiration from the Dharma, just having, you know, having heard these talks, having sort of been to into the shrine room and being in contact with these people, these Buddhists, and walking on the lawn and just realizing that I couldn't really turn back. I couldn't really turn my back on what I just discovered, what I just heard, what it inspired me. It just was so profound for me and kind of scary and shocking at the same time that that I couldn't just go home and pretend nothing happened and carry on with life as it was. I had to do something about what I'd heard, what I'd experienced. And for me, that was a virya. That was virya for me, that kind of energy that I felt suddenly really plugged in, plugged into what really, really mattered. Because that is what really matters. It's actually the only thing that really matters in life is tending to your growth and development, your spiritual growth and development, and helping others, serving others in that way. And this is the path of the Bodhisattva. So the Bodhisattva is dedicated to serving the highest welfare of all living beings with the awakened heart of unconditional love, skillful wisdom, and all-embracing compassion. It's also a joyous energy. Virya is a joyous energy. It gives you pleasure. It's a great thing to feel buoyant in that way and to feel inspired in that way. So it helps to have some virya. But what if you don't? What if you just don't really feel any virya? You're just plugging along, you're just doing your thing, you don't really feel that inspired. It's really important in spiritual life that we have a routine or a practice of some sort that we keep doing. Especially when the chips are down, when things aren't really going our way, when we just don't feel inspired, when everything seems a bit pointless, and this is a nihilist speaking here, and I really know what that feels like, you know, thinking, what's the point? Why should I? Can't be asked. And yet, at those moments, it's really important to sort of keep at it, even though it may be boring, and you don't feel it's really doing anything for you. But the very fact of applying yourself in that sort of regular way will bear fruit. You can count on it that it will. So one of the things about virya, there are several kinds of virya, is that you don't give up. You don't give up. Where are my five kinds of virya? Yeah. Five kinds of virya. So the one is like it's ever ready. It's always there for you to engage with. You know, you're always ready. And you're never satisfied. So there's always more to be done. There's always more to be worked on. There's always useful to look for what's your working ground, what's your cutting edge in your practice. Where could you stretch yourself a little bit more, perhaps? So in that way, never satisfied. And you don't turn your back on it. Like you don't give up, you don't turn your back on it. And the important one is not to lose heart in it all. Because actually, the spiritual life is difficult. You know, it says that in, I don't know if the Buddha said it, but certainly Sangharakshita Bhante says it, you know, the spiritual life is difficult. And I think when I first came across that expression, I thought, yeah, you know, for some. But if you really apply yourself, it is the most challenging thing you could ever undertake. There's nothing more challenging than starting on a spiritual path. There's nothing more challenging in life. It's difficult, but anyone, and that's the good thing about it, anyone of sound mind can do it, basically. So there was a story about someone who went up to Bhante years ago. It's an old story. It kind of stuck with me for a particular reason. Going to Bhante saying, you know, I just can't do it. I can't really do it. I know everyone else can, but I can't. I can't really do it. I can't do meditation. And Bhante said, well, what's so special about you that you can't do it? Because actually, everyone can do it. It's a matter of applying yourself. It is really a matter of applying yourself. And not so much compare yourself with others, but just, you know, you've got to find your way. So not to lose heart is a kind of virya, not to lose heart, not to think you can't do it, not to sort of suffer from lack of confidence in it. Well, what if you already suffer from lack of confidence? What do you do? Too late. I've lost heart already. What do I do? Well, classically in Buddhism, what you would do is to consider your mortality. You reflect on the brevity of life. Death is certain. The time of death is uncertain. As we know with Manjushvara, who just died yesterday, and it was very sudden, it was very shocking. He was just on retreat, he had a stroke, and he died. He wasn't that old. So it's good to remember that, to sort of reflect on that, that we only have limited time. We only have limited time. And if something is really important, then we'd better get to work on it, because it would be a bit of a shame to put it off. And then we die, and then we haven't really used our time well. Because after all, we're all in the same samsaric boat, you know, none of us accept it. We're all subject to the three lakshanas, the three marks of conditioned existence, like impermanence, we're not here forever, and nothing lasts forever, insubstantiality, and unsatisfactoriness, you know, things are unsatisfactory. not all things, but at the end of the day, they are because they end. So even if you're having a great time, it's good to reflect that, you know, it's not going to last forever. So good to remember that. We're all in the same samsaric boat, and there's really no way out of that except through spiritual practice. And virya is much needed in that. We could also consider the consequences of not living a dharmic life. Just, you know, think, well, what would it be like? I wouldn't lead a dharmic life. I wouldn't have a practice, wouldn't meditate, wouldn't really practice ethics. Where would it lead me? Where would I end up? And that's a useful thing to reflect on, I think. Because you're just going round and round endlessly until you don't. Yeah, it's that simple. Now, also, the last kind of virya is that it's applied work. So when we have virya, we need to apply it. And we need to apply it in just in our daily practice, in our daily work. So we can apply it in our practice of our precepts, the five precepts, and apply it in our meditation. Because if we put energy into things like that, we also generate energy. So virya also begets virya. Yeah, I think when meditation is difficult, I find meditation, I have a sort of, sometimes I just really don't get on with it at all. And then I think, oh well, there's something else. You know, there's always my practice of ethics, or there's always something I can do, and to focus on that. Because you can also really beat yourself up unnecessarily about something that you feel slightly at a sort of at a loss with, or slightly at a not very inspiring place with. Look for where is the inspiration, where is the energy. And I think that's really helpful, rather than sort of really beat yourself up to keep going at this particular thing that you're trying to do, whether it be meditation or certain ethics that you have difficulties with. It's really important to see where is your energy, where does it go, and once you've found it, you know, you can use that again to apply to your practice. So you look for your energy and you look for where your strengths are. So applied effort or applied work, Buddhism is full of handy little lists to remember things by. We have the Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, the Five Kinds of Virya. We also have the Four Efforts, Four Right Efforts. And the Four Right Efforts really apply to virya. It's like, how do you use your virya? How do you do it? Because you can sort of have ideas about it, but how do you sort of, on a day-to-day practice, how do you apply it? So the first two are about preventing unskillful mental states from arising. And the second one is about when it's already arisen, what do? You eradicate it. Oh well. Okay, all right then. Sounds all very easy. And I think we can have a bit of a tendency sometimes in our culture to be quite hard on ourselves, to sort of punish ourselves in a particular way. So when you notice there's a particular tendency or quality, you know, tendency that you have that is not helpful. For instance, if you are quick to rise to anger or something like that, not a helpful tendency. So ideally, you'd be able to prevent that by avoiding situations that would trigger that in you, because you probably know what these situations are. And I certainly know that can be difficult, but because if you have a tendency to anger, you're often attracted to that kind of thing because you get your energy going in a particular way, and you can express yourself in a way that you're used to, that is familiar to you. but to actually avoid situations where that might happen is also using your virya to break through, you know, your particular habit. Because that is what virya you can apply it to. It's actually breaking through your particular habits that hold you back, that hold you in a certain space, that keep you from growing and developing spiritually. I'd rather think of the second two about cultivation and maintaining. So actually cultivating skillful mental states, and when you have them, and of course we all have them, to maintain them, to apply our energy in such a way that they can thrive. And I would say just by applying yourself to cultivate and maintain positive qualities, positive mental states, if you just do that, never mind the first two, in a way, because if you get better and better at cultivating kindness, tolerance, must be able to think of a few more than those, but those kinds of qualities, if you're able to really develop that more and more, in fact, by their very development, the first, you know, any sort of unskillful mental states will lessen, because what you give attention to will grow, and what you sort of don't give attention to usually can sort of become less. But you have to sort of be aware of them. Now, so virya, very positive and energetic, bodhisattva kind of energy. Now, the opposite of virya, of what you've already done in this class a few weeks ago, is kshanti, or patience. And they go together, because virya, as enthusiasm, as sort of zeal and enthusiasm, if you just have that, and you don't have the kshanti side of things, it can very easily become unrooted, or out there, very enthusiastic about something. But if it's not rooted somehow, if there's no receptivity, if there's no patience in there as well, it will all go, you know, it will just sort of blow out quite easily. So virya and kshanti go hand in hand. If you have too much kshanti, like you're quite content, for instance, because you can be quite contented, like you've organized your life in such a way that all your needs are met, it's all cozy, it's all very pleasant, you've got a lovely circle of friends, you get the right food, go on holiday from time to time. Sounds like myself. Then it's good to sort of think, where can you stretch yourself? Because if you get too contented, almost too sort of cozy, you lose a certain edge. You're in danger of losing a certain edge. You can just become too passive and actually disengage from what really matters, which is growing and developing. That's what spiritual life is about. It's not about getting cozy. It's nice to be cozy, but it's also really good not to sort of get too embedded in that. So we need energy in our practice. If we get too cozy, if we get too too content, can you be too content? Well, in a way, yes, you can, because I think what happens if you get very contented in a particular way is that you everything in your own little orbit, in your own little world, is just nice, you know, pleasant, lovely, all good. And if something arises that is not so nice and pleasant, then, well, you know, you sort of do something else that's nice and forget about it, or you just get over it. It's good to stretch ourselves. That's what, as a bodhisattva, that's what we want to do. We want to stretch ourselves. So, virya without kshanti is unrooted, blows out quickly, but kshanti without virya gets easily too passive. So, need them both. And to cultivate them, cultivate a skillful mental state, is also an exciting thing to be doing. It's also exciting to do that, to see, say you just take something in your life that you feel you could be better at. You could maybe be kinder, or maybe more open, or maybe more receptive to other people when they're talking, or there are many things that, you know, we could sort of improve on, we could do better. And it's exciting to really apply ourselves to that and see after some time that actually, you know, we are better at this. We've developed a bit, we've grown a bit in that way. We've stretched ourselves beyond our usual habitual ways of being. Yeah, it's a bit like watering the seed and making sure you create the right conditions for yourself. And I think creating the right conditions for myself, I always think of coziness, actually. I think the right conditions for myself are that, you know, pleasant, nice warm bed. Just everything nice. And it's really good to sort of see where you can stretch yourself. Because in that stretching, where you just go beyond yourself, beyond your usual, and that's where virya arises. Because that's where sort of there's a gap there for virya to arise. No idea what time it is, by the way. Yeah. Nine. Okay. Okay. Yes. So we talked about that, and we talked about virya and kshanti, and of course the opposite of virya is Sanskrit word kausidya, or translated as laziness. Laziness, or not to make use of. Not to waste time. So there are, again, there's a little list. Three kinds of laziness. I didn't number my pages. Here we go. There are three ways that we waste time. Only three, you might think. The first one is we hold back from doing what we know to be good. Recognize that one. You know it would be good for you to, you know, it would help if you got up in the morning, sat down to meditate, if that's your practice. You know you would benefit from it. But, for some reason, time just passes. You've had a cup of tea, or you're still in bed, or someone calls, and it's not happening. Yes, I know that one. So we hold back from doing what we know to be good. And that can apply to, of course, many situations in your life, not just to meditation practice. It can be in terms of in communication with people, where your communication with someone is maybe not so good and could be better. And maybe you could do something, you could make a move, take a step to improve that, to reach out to someone or... to be open to somebody, and not doing that, you know, will in a way hold us back. It will hold us back. So holding back from doing what we know to be good. And again, we can use the precepts as our, I always think it's our sort of framework, you know, it's our daily thing. Meditation and ethics and the precepts are really our framework. That's what we can work with all the time. We can apply that all the time. And it's fantastic to have that. I take it for granted, actually. But when I think about it, I think it's fantastic to have that, to sort of fall back on. In any situation you're in, you could just fall back on that, on the precepts, to see, you know, am I actually practicing truthful speech here, or am I being quite honest, or am I not taking the not given, or taking the not given? All these things, you can really apply that to your life all the time. It's so practical. So anyway, that's the first way we waste time. We hold back from doing what we know to be good. Might be obvious what that is for you. The second one is doing things that are trivial or even harmful. Well, let me think. There are of course many things that we do that are trivial. In our speech in particular, I would say we can have very often have trivial speech or activities that we do that are quite trivial, that don't necessarily or don't at all contribute to our own growth and development. There are many things that don't particularly. Good to think about that, what that is for you. Things that are trivial or even harmful. I was thinking about harmful. I think there are many, we live in such a complicated and complex world these days, that, you know, it's sometimes hard to know what is harmful or how harmful things are. It's even in the products we buy or the clothes we buy, the food we eat, you know, where does it come from? What's the sort of chain of things? Who's been involved in producing this? You know, is there sort of slave labor involved? It's very hard to know. It's very difficult to know these things these days, but it's still good to think about what we use in our life, what we do, where does it come from? And the third one, well, I got to that one already, I covered that one under the five kinds of virya. It's losing heart or becoming discouraged. So, and we can often use our energy to punish ourselves. So if we lose heart or if we feel unconfident, I notice often in people it's a tendency to say, oh, stupid, you know, I did it again, stupid me. There's not much kindness in there. There's not much kindness in there, and I think it's a real challenge to practice kindness towards yourself, because a lot of people find it easy enough to be kind to somebody else, kind to a friend or even to a stranger. And if we saw someone struggling, you know, with lots of bags up and down the stairs at the tube, we probably wouldn't even think twice before offering to help. There's so many things that we just immediately, our innate tendency is to help, to reach out and help. But often when it comes to ourselves, we feel often very miserably. That's my experience, and also what I often see in other people, that we can be so hard on ourselves. And to actually try that kindness towards us. Think, well, okay, I've lost heart, I just don't really feel this is going to work. Also to see that, well, the spiritual life is not going to be hey-ho all the way through. Well, hands up if it is, sorry. It isn't, and sometimes it's really boring. And sometimes, you know, you just don't know why you're doing it. But I think it's really good to know that that's part of it. To know that is just part of it. And we practically apply ourselves by having the ideal of enlightenment. So it could be the Buddha. It might not be the Buddha for you. It might be a bodhisattva figure. It might just be a symbol. Something that inspires you, something that for you embodies realization, enlightenment, you know, that. And to have that, to remind yourself of that all the time, I think is important. So that's the sort of the transcendental. And then, but we don't want to get carried away with that, you know, like, oh yes, I'll get enlightened. Because we're just here, and we have to just be in our experience where we are. And for each of us, that is different. So it's really crucial that you know where you're at, that you know where you are, how you feel, what's going on with you. It's really crucial that you know, so you can then apply yourself in a way that is helpful to you and that's kind to yourself. I really want to stress that. That's why I think with the four efforts, it's, in my view, more important to cultivate positive mental states than to sort of look for the ones that you feel you need to eradicate. Because positivity will outweigh the negativity in the end. And it's important that we develop virya. So if we don't develop that kind of energy, it's more easy to become disillusioned with our practice. And especially when we meet with adverse conditions. So if things are not really going how we would like them to go. If we have a bit of virya there somewhere. And look for it, look where your energy is, find your energy, find where your strengths are. Then we can also deal with periods in our lives when things aren't really going our way. Because we can just remind ourselves it's impermanent, it won't be like that forever. And our virya may be this much, but you know, there's something we can develop again, there's something we can inspire ourselves with. So if we have that kind of joyous effort and sort of enthusiastic perseverance, we can see whatever happens in our life as grist to our mill. So whatever happens is we'd welcome it in a way because it's something to practice. That's what bodhisattvas love. They love meeting people they can't stand because they just, you know, they feel like, oh, I've got something to work with here. Something to work with here. If you just meet people that, you know, you get on with and they all think the same and they all agree with you, it's all very nice. But to meet someone who doesn't, who gets up your nose, you know, who really irritates you, those are the people we need. Yeah. And we really do. And that's part of the metta-bhavana as well, in sort of the fourth stage, is sort of people who, you know, we find difficult. But if your practice is strong enough, you know, you can deal with that. In fact, you'd welcome it. As a budding bodhisattva, you'd welcome it. Because everybody around us always serves as a mirror for ourselves. So whatever we see in someone else that we find either beautiful or irritating, or very irritating, is usually, well not usually, it always is an indicator of something in ourselves. So we are always, the whole world is a mirror to us. The way we see the world when we're in love and the way we see the world when we've just been dumped, whatever, it's all the same and yet it looks very different. So, yeah. Yeah, to see everything as a mirror. To have that kind of virya where whatever we meet, you know, is, we don't want to avoid. I think that's what it is. We don't particularly want to avoid because we can deal with it. And it's also good to realize when actually you can't deal with it. Then it's better to avoid, obviously. So know thyself. Because it's easy enough to be gung-ho about it. But you need to be so sensitive. I think you need to be so sensitive to yourself. What you like, and it can be different in at different times. What you need to do. It's such a sort of precarious balance all the time. But the most important thing is to stay with your experience, to stay with what is your experience, and feel the energy in that, and see how you can use that to increase your energy, how you can practice with it. It's not an abstract idea, virya. it permeates you. I see it like that. It's more something that permeates you. It's not a thing. It's not a sort of whatever that comes up. It's almost like a mist. It's almost like around us, and it permeates us, and our ideas, and our imagination, and our activities. And we can encourage it through symbols or art or being in nature or through a Buddha figure or a Bodhisattva figure. We can also encourage it through sound of mantra or certain music that can really inspire us. And these things can really invigorate our virya and keep it alive. It's a great thing, basically. It's a great thing, virya. And as I said, without virya, no spiritual life is possible. And because you're all here, I imagine you all have some. To whatever extent, to whatever degree. And it's a fine balance. So once you have it, and apply yourself through the efforts, it's something you can increase all the time and be a happier person. Sounds like a sort of weird thing to end on. To be a happier person. Sounds a bit... It's true though, you would be a happier person. Yeah, you would be a happier person. Virya gives you focus in spiritual life. It gives you a direction where you're going to go, and it's also the momentum that you have when you have it, the momentum you're in. That's what virya is, and very much required for leading the spiritual life, and especially in a place like London, I think it can easily sort of seep away, because virya, you can also lose it quite easily. Once you have it, you can lose it easily. You can lose it through, through, say, things like in speech precepts, for instance, which I think are so sort of everyday things. You can lose virya through, say, gossiping or just talking badly about things or about other people. And you know it, and the moment you do it, you know it, something is lost there. It's very palpable, actually. When you try to stick to the precepts, and when in a moment you are maybe a bit less than honest, you know it, you can feel it, that virya, you know, it kind of just goes down a little bit. You can really feel it. I think it's very palpable. And just as it is very palpable when through positive practice and cultivation of positive mental states, it increases. You can also really feel that, so it's very much sort of there for us to really feel, really be part of our experience. And that's what I'd like you to encourage, if nothing else, from this whole talk, to sort of be with what your experience is, and your experience is unique to you. Find your energy that is rooted in the Dharma, that is directed by the precepts and by your drive to grow and develop. And to be sensitive to what is right for you. Important. Yeah, so I would say go out, go beyond yourself. Stretch yourself, find a bit of a gap where virya can arise, and just learn to recognize it so that you know when it's there. Thank you.